Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Creams and serums are made of 70% water, 15% preservatives and emulsifiers, leaving only around 15% for the active ingredients that your skin needs. But luckily now, there's Fiber Skincare.
15 years ago, the scientists behind Fiber Skincare started working on nanofibers, which are 500 times smaller than human hair. You know, I saw that in Three Body Problem. Mm. 1 year ago, they patented a way of wrapping the nanofiber around oil or liquid-based ingredients. This means they can deliver 5 times the active ingredients compared to creams or serums, as there is no need for water, preservatives, or emulsifiers.
The first formulation made with this technology is plant-based, anti-wrinkle. It's a set of patches that you use over a series of 7 days. You just put these on whenever you would apply your serums, and your skin is going to feel tighter in 10 seconds. And over the seven-day program, it has been clinically proven to reduce wrinkles by, get this, 19.4%, a very precise percentage. In fact, they have a tighter skin guarantee. If your skin isn't tighter in 7 days, they're going to give you your money back, no questions asked.
You get the tighter skin guarantee with this 7-day routine. Tighter skin or your money back. Get a 15% discount code by using the discount code GAME. That's Fiber Skincare.
It's the Game of Roses. Welcome to the Game of Roses. This is the Game of Roses.
Months ago, you took a bold risk for love, and now you're finally here at the Bachelor Mansion. This card gives you the power to steal a one-on-one date from someone else at any time before hometowns.
Me being here and me making this for you is like all for like the right reasons. So for TRR means for the right reasons.
I became Maria's target. She like verbally attacked me and I just sat there and held my composure. She called me embarrassing, weird, and dumb.
Unfortunately, like I want to be excited to hang out with Joey, but I'm dreading it because spending a whole day with Maria is like spending the whole day with the devil.
Can we get 2 hot cocoas, please?
Yeah, of course. Thank you.
When was the last time you had a hot cocoa?
Yesterday.
No, really?
There's been kind of a wall for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd rather, like, dive right into it. And I want you to know I am falling in love with you, and I've been falling in love with you.
Card was put in my door from Kelsey that says we need to talk. I don't understand what this is. I don't understand it. I'm confused. I didn't expect to see a note on my door. I don't know what's going on. It could be bad things, could be good. I don't know. But usually when someone writes, we need to talk, it's scary and you think it could be something went wrong.
Jesse Palmer was a much better bachelor than me.
This forehand has potential.
Jesse Palmer
is my hero.
Jesse, you are a
tennis player.
Jesse Palmer.
Is like the new John McEnroe.
Falling in love with you has been so fun. And I do love you. But the thing is, you're not going to choose me.
Welcome to Game of Roses. This is Pace Case.
This is Bachelor Clues, and Bachelor Season 28 has concluded, but our thoughts about it have not. This is, of course...
They've been sticking with us. No off-season at Gore.
To say the least, I have found myself staring into space, thinking very deeply about all that we have just witnessed in the recently concluded Bachelor Season 28. And today's episode is going to be all about the top 10 takeaways from this season. And there were a lot more than 10. Let's just say that. But we carved it down.
Let's just say we did our best.
we combined some.
We're only human.
But yeah, a lot is going on. Obviously, there's also a bunch of new podcasts that are coming out. We have a new Digging Deeper out today that you can get full access to on our Patreon at patreon.com/gamerroses. And we're going to be covering probably all these new podcasts, honestly, in future Digging Deepers. We got Madison Pruitt's podcast.
Yeah, we got Maddie Prue. She's talking about Bachelor. I'm so happy for you.
Thank you. I still haven't listened to that episode, but I'm going to very shortly. Her second episode supposedly is more about The Bachelor than her first episode.
Indulge.
Thank you. I will. We've got Golden Happy Hour. We've got Gabby Windy's podcast. We've got Chelsea Vaughn's podcast.
Anna Redmond.
Everybody's coming out with podcasts, and we're going to cover as many of those as we can for you in Digging Deepers.
And we're also still doing live shows, even though you may think it's the off season. Gore is always on, and we're also going to be doing some incredible interviews coming up.
Yes, we're looking to expand our interview game here during the off season and well beyond that as well. So please join us for all that.
Let us know who you want us to talk to the most in the comments.
I'll let you know. Alex Michelle. I want to talk to him the most of anybody in the Bachelor world. Please, Alex Michelle, if you're listening to this, this is my plea to you.
Wait, he's your number one.
Yes.
I feel like we asked this question a while ago and you said DLH.
I mean, DLH, I feel like is just, it's an easier get. I don't know that he would ever talk to us. Like, I don't know if it's an easy get for us, but he's out there. He's still in the media. He has his own podcast. He goes on other podcasts.
He is podcasting.
Alex Michelle has disappeared.
What if Alex Michelle dropped a podcast?
Oh my God. I don't know if it would do well. He would have one listener. That's for fucking sure.
It's called Bachelor OG OG.
Oh my God.
Bachelor Og Og.
He built the game on his back. Let's continue, shall we, Pace Case, with our top 10 takeaways of the season. And also, at the end of this episode, we're going to give out our season-long awards. We're talking about face play of the season, error of the season, play of the season, Jorge Moreno, creature, MVP, so on and so forth. All of that will be at the end of this episode. So be sure to stick around until we get there. All right, are you ready? We're going to start at number 10 and go up to the top. And we'll also give you some almost made it's as well. But
and then some honorable mentions.
All right, do you want to kick it off, Pace Case?
Yes, I do. Our 10th most important takeaway from Joey Grazadeh's Bachelor season was the document presentation. Starting with a clip at the beginning of each episode, we started with that incredible tear play by Joey, that clip heard around the world. Could have been face play of the season, probably should have been, but I have a different one. And I would say the editing in general, that scene, Maria flirting with Joey in the car, it felt so real. In a way that the conversations don't feel real. It felt more for TRR because of those silly little moments, because relationships aren't just love levels and PTCs.
Yeah. And I would say too, it's like, we have to remember what you're talking about, Pace Case, in the beginning, where they started with just a clip that came basically from the third act of every episode. That was the intro for all episodes this season. What it was prior to this is a cut down of the entire episode where they would show you literally everything that's going to happen. Spoiled every episode.
AKA spoilers. you have to be on the ball to fast forward them if you're me. Ghost protocol.
Exactly. And I would also say, like, we had some influence in this. I think we did an episode last year called How to Save the Bachelor, and this was literally what we said to do. They're now doing it. And we'll get to another one of these top 10 things later about ratings, but
I think it was in our top 10 takeaways. It was in our top 10 takeaways from Golden Bachelor, because they did it in that.
Oh yeah, exactly. Exactly. But it's more than that. It's about what they're choosing to put in the show as well. We saw an outstanding play by Evelyn Clark, where she gifted Joey a denim jacket, and on the interior of the jacket, she had sewn into it the words 4TRR, or the letters, I should say. Not only do they include this in the edit, they allow it to breathe. They allow Evelyn Clark to give the definition of 4TRR for the right reasons. That is something that we, I believe, have coined. I mean, it's something certainly that we use a lot in our podcast, 4TRR. And for the Bachelors to include it in the edit is, I believe, an open admission that they are kind of okay with the gamification of this now, with how we view the show is now a part of the show.
Evelyn's inclusion of the definition of 4TRR was my runner-up for play of the season.
Oh, me too.
I loved it. I thought I was hallucinating. I was like, I didn't ever think I would see anything like that.
What a hallucination.
Some of the things that are happening that I feel like we've been manifesting in 2020 Gore, it feels like hallucination. I'm like, we're living in some sort of a simulation, or
to me, it feels like hard work paying off. We've been at this for a minute now.
I mean, that's probably more.
We're in our fourth year of this podcast, and I think we're starting to see the fruits of our labor being presented literally on screen. But I agree with you.
An embarrassment of riches, are you saying?
Yes. but certainly the presentation of the document has changed. We also saw this season, there was only one episode that didn't end with a rose ceremony. This was another thing that we had in our How to Save the Bachelor episode, is present every episode from the beginning to the end, end every episode with a rose ceremony. They only didn't do that once, and it was in the week when they back-to-backed us with a Monday and Tuesday episode.
That was kind of like a rain. The game was rained out.
Yeah, exactly.
You want the final score to be at the end of the game.
And they did that expertly this season. And, you know, these may seem like small things, but all the small things contribute to the whole of what this season was. And like I said, we'll get to another number on this list when we talk about ratings. But it's undeniable, whatever was happening in this season was way better than it's been in a long time on every measurable level. All right, let's move on, shall we? Our number 9 takeaway from this season was the night one curveball, Leia's date card in the fireplace. Now we saw... we saw something like this in... Was this Shawcross's season? Or was it Clayton Eckerd? The Fimpros, the America's Fimp?
Oh, Brienne? It was in Christina Mandrell's season, because she used something that she said, right? A catchphrase?
Yes, I believe so. It was Brianna Thorburn in Zach Shawcross's season got America's first impression rose. She got to come out at the after the final rose of the prior Bachelorette season, where Zach Shawcross was named the next Bachelor. And in that moment, they did this thing where he met five players that were going to come out on his season. And then, in quotes, America got to vote for which among them was going to get America's first impression rose, which would keep them safe on night one.
They were counting on Twitter.
Counting hashtags on Twitter. So it was obviously not right. It was not like accurate. It was just completely manufactured by producers. But Brianna won that, and then as a result had a target on her back, and it kind of disastered her season, in my opinion. She got kicked out in 16th place. You know, not great. So I think this was a better version of that, Leia's date card.
It is kind of a similar thing. It definitely put a target on both of them.
Yeah. But the idea that there's this mechanic that they can basically give a player who gets to come out in the live after the final rose, when the incoming Bachelor gets to meet five of his new players, they have this mechanic now in place where they will give one of these players potentially a sacred boon, if you will, from the underworld that allows them some benefit in night one. And in this case, with Leia, they up that a notch by giving her a benefit that was carte blanche, all regular season long, that she could have stolen a date from anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw how this ended.
We don't see that many new game mechanics at this point in the show.
Yeah.
So I do think, even if these don't work exactly as they're intended, I do think the idea is right, that they need to be evolving the game.
I completely agree. I don't think they've gotten it correct yet. And we gave Leia the play of the game, both of us did, on night one, mm-hmm, for throwing it in the fire. Because that, it's a curse. That card is a curse. There is no good way to use it. And so you have to get rid of it. I think she had no other play. And obviously, I think the producers realized that too, because they allowed her to do it.
Or give it to someone else.
Yeah, I guess she could have done that. But I mean, then that person's got the target. It's just not a good thing to have.
I would throw it on the table. Whoever wants it can have it.
Well, I mean...
Or throw it in the pool, actually. And then people have to jump in the pool to get it.
Yeah, you got to go out there and get it, fish it out.
Be your own producer, we always say.
Yes, that's true. Leia, though, I think in a brilliant kind of strategic move, essentially traded the card for the first impression rose. And that was kind of like as much as you could ask for, really. You know, it was a very good night one play.
Yeah, I thought she was going to be Hometown's band.
I did too. And little did we know she was going to get embroiled in a strange rivalry. But I do think that this mechanic, like you were saying, Pace Case, I like it. I like getting something if you're one of those five players, even though that's kind of handpicked too. It's like the producers are choosing five players to come out. Then they're choosing one to give the thing to. That's completely subjective.
But it's still someone who agreed to go on the show earlier.
Yeah, but I mean, once you're cast and they tell you like, hey, we want you to come do this live thing, what are you going to do? Say no? You can still be yanked out of the show because they don't shoot.
Right.
They're going to announce The Bachelor, for example, the next one, at the end of Leia's season or at the end of Jen's season.
You think they would have had players on there who didn't make it on the show?
Not in the live, but they always overcast. I'm saying if they call you up and say, we want you to come to the live show and you say no, they can get rid of you. If you say yes, very hard to get rid of you if he's already met you, you know?
Hard to edit out. Yes, that's what I was meaning.
So you absolutely want to say yes to it. And then if you get this weird mechanic, you have to figure out how that's going to affect your season or whatever. But I like the idea that there is this gift you can get if you are one of those five or however many they select that can have some effect on your game, positive or negative. I just don't think they've nailed it yet. But kudos for the attempt, at the very least.
Speaking of kudos, kudos go out to our number 8 most important takeaway from Joey's season, Golden Fairy Godmothers. We saw them throughout the season hosting dates. We saw them come in the playoffs to give advice to the top four players. And we saw them in the After the Final Rose to lend emotional support there once the players were dumped or the winner.
Yeah.
And this tied together Golden Bachelor so well. It was characters that we already care about. Mm-hmm. Other than them, in my opinion, villainizing Leslie Fima in the edit, I loved it.
I don't think they villainized her at all. She's going to be your Golden Bachelorette, which I think will be announced at some point very soon. Probably during Jen's run. I think they'll probably announce it somewhere mid-season and maybe even have her come back to give some kind of super Golden Fairy Godmother Golden Bachelorette.
Pre-Council of Crowns.
But I loved this, and I thought not only with the Golden Fairy Godmothers was it a great kind of like legacy play. They really are now building out the Bachelor universe and making sure that you know like it's all one thing. The Golden Bachelor ladies, the top four of them anyway, are going to be around. They're going to be in the other shows. They've got a podcast now. They're in the audience. They're doing everything. They're just like a part of it.
Yeah.
And I think that this also goes with the legacy treatment this season, which was fantastic. At that After the Final Rose, that audience was stacked with massive legacy players other than John Bresch and Sean McLaughlin. Other than them, everybody else was like...
Wait, I saw there were more Bachelor in Paradise players there too.
Oh, really?
I want to say Tanner.
Really? Tanner Courtad? Huh. That I don't know.
Yeah. But they weren't in the document, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, that is even better if they had it that stacked. But you saw all those bachelorettes there. Rachel Recchio was there. Gabby was there. Charity was there.
Daughton.
Yeah, Daughton, the ring winner, of course. They're doing, I think, a good job of having these legacy players there.
Mm-hmm.
Showing like it is this big family. It's great.
It legitimizes it. It yeah. says no season is chintzy. No season will be like the bubble season and no one will want to come to the reunions mm-hmm. and it'll just be a bunch of civilians in jewel tones. No, we're going to have icons in jewel tones.
Yeah. And I would even argue that like the casting of DLP as the host is like a part of this kind of legacy thing. They could have mm-hmm. easily gone outside the franchise to get somebody else to come into it. And I do think that person would have felt like an outsider to the franchise. It's like, especially to like deep 4TRR, fourth audience members like you and I and everybody mm-hmm. listening to this right now and a bunch of other people. Like, I think there's a big contingent of the fourth audience that is like, has been here from the beginning and knows this like, you know, very intimately. And if you bring in some outside host who's just like, yeah, I like The Bachelor, whatever, it would feel bad for a lot of us.
Where's my check?
Yeah, exactly.
David Spade.
Whereas DLP is like, he was a part of it. He was a bachelor. I like that. I like that they did that. And it's a legacy play.
I like that too. I think there's probably a big contingent of the fourth audience that yeah. doesn't know he was a bachelor, but it doesn't matter because he's an empathetic king.
Okay.
Nonetheless.
If you say so. Let's move on here. Our number seven takeaway from the top 10 takeaways of Bachelor season 28 is the deep talent pool. We have never seen a season this stacked with pro players. Now, Pace Case and I made a prediction back in Bachelor season 24, if you can remember back that far
mm-hmm.
in early 2020.
Pre-COVID.
We predicted that Madison Pruitt and Hannah Sluss were kind of the blueprint for a new era, a new type of player, which is somebody who has watched this show basically since infancy and just has kind mm-hmm. of through osmosis come to understand all the various components and mechanics of the game, how it's structured and how to play it. And we saw Hannah Sluss turn in arguably the greatest night one performance of all time. We saw Madison Pruitt just
arguably the greatest hometown's performance of all time. Bring her home to us.
Yes. Oh, God, bring her home to us. How I miss that. But we saw in those two players something special. And our prediction during that season was that eventually we're going to get a full season of Sluss's and Pruitt's. And I think this season is the closest to that. The top 10 mm-hmm. players of this season, in my opinion, all could have been astounding bachelorettes. And
I agree.
To have just a pool that deep when people get kicked off and you're like, Jesus, in any other season, she would have won the season. In any other season, she would have dominated it.
Yes.
And it's just, you know, you saw the high level play when we got down to the final two, final three, final four. All of them were absolute superstars. And I hope that this is what we're going to see from now on. I think this is like a indicator of things to come.
I think we will. I think you don't put Pandora back in the box. When I was going through what were my errors of the season, I was like, there were so many in crown contention. So I was like, oh, is it Lexi self-elimination? Because she yeah. could have been in crown contention as well. There were just the mm-hmm. amount of people that could have been crown was astounding. And I'm so proud of everyone who yeah. who played so well this season. It was so fun to watch, but there was something that wasn't fun to watch. And that was our number six most important takeaway from Grazia Day's season.
Okay.
Maria and Daisy turning down the crown. To our knowledge, this has never happened. In the document. I mean, I'm sure it has happened. We've heard people say that they turned down the crown before, but they literally asked Daisy on stage and she turns it down there. There is conspiracy town. Did she do it live? Had she already turned it down, etc.? We have Maria's dad out there in the comments, like verifying this tea that Maria was offered it, or at least had some amount of dipping her toe into it. This isn't a good sign, I don't think.
It was very shocking to me after a season that was so good and the play level was so high to see these two top level players turn it down. like you're saying, Daisy did it on camera and she did do it before that. I mean, there's no way they would be like, oh my God, she said no. Who are we going to get in the next 5 minutes? They had all of that set up. They had shot a clock set up.
You don't think they have Rachel and Jen in like holding cells backstage?
Absolutely not. They knew what they were doing, but the truth of the matter seems to be now that Maria did say yes to the crown and that they had been shooting with her for a couple of days. I maintain, and this requires a little trip, pace case of mini move. You got to pack your bags because we're going to
Conspiracy Town. Population me.
I believe we are living through Phantom Night 1 Part 2. I believe Maria met all of these guys. I believe there was a Night 1 shot with Maria. And that tape exists. Release the tape. I have no evidence of this.
Clues. Haven't we learned any lessons from Phantom Night 1 Part 1?
Yes, that had happened.
What? What evidence?
I've learned that lesson. I've learned that they did this once before. They could do it again. I have no evidence. This is simply what I think. And I'll take those thoughts to my grave if I have to. But
no receipts, clues, strikes again.
That's right. I don't need receipts when I know what's true in my heart. I believe, again, this is all conjecture. I have no proof of this, but I believe that Maria shot a Night 1 and that it was so overwhelming for her. She made a mental health decision to say, I can't do this right now. The producers, now being seemingly producers who back up their leads, were like, all right, we got you. You don't have to do this. We'll figure something out. They allowed Maria to eject without much fight. And then they got Jen Tran as quickly as they could. Because that shot a clock thing. And what was the other one? I'm looking for a radical kind of love or whatever she was saying. Do you remember this?
I think we've said different words every time. Ferocious, tenacious, ludicrous.
Yeah, it was like a ferocious love maybe or something like that. A cannibalistic kind of love.
I prefer stupid little shit.
Yeah, stupid little moments.
Stupid little things you say.
But the idea that they planned Jen Tran's shot o'clock or whatever she was saying, they were trying to get her to do multiple catchphrases and like, oh, we can do shot o'clock. That is such a last minute idea. They didn't anticipate that for at least a couple days. They probably knew Jen Tran was going to be the Bachelorette, I would say, 24 hours before they shot that, maybe.
Oh my gosh.
Because they were shooting. They were already shooting the season with Maria.
At the Listen to Your Heart house?
That, I don't know why they're doing that. I'm digging. I'm trying to find some information about why they're shooting at the Listen to Your Heart house.
Okay. If there is any evidence out there that this is not just a, what do we call? DeLulu clues moment.
DeClue clues.
BB girl clues. There's so many different types.
Yeah.
Yeah, please let us know that. I can't believe I'm going down this path again. I thought I was done with Phantom Night 1. I thought we had cleared it.
They were shooting with her.
Claire Crawley?
What about her?
No.
What?
No. I'm saying the original Phantom Night 1 was proven wrong.
By whom?
By all of the evidence.
Evidence? I'm sorry. This is Conspiracy Town, Population Me. We don't need no evidence here. And I'll give you Claire Crawley. I'll even give that to you, okay? The evidence of Claire Crawley's Night 1 is thin, to say the least. It really only exists in my mind. That said, the evidence for Maria is much stronger. We know she was shooting for multiple days. That seems to be very corroborated at this point.
Probably promos.
Could have been promos.
I think in part of the evidence we gathered with the first Phantom Night 1, it was that this is a very expensive production.
Yep.
And they're not going to just shoot a Night 1 if they're not sure that person is going to be the lead.
I agree with you. But now we have to really look at this, okay? Let's say that they're just shooting promos and Maria's like, shit, I'm about to really do this. We're shooting the thing where I have to be like, I can't believe I'm the Bachelorette. And we're shooting this. And now they're interviewing my dad and all this. And then she pulls out because the pressure's mounting and she's questioning if she can really do it or hear me out. She is like, okay, this could be a lot, but I don't know. I have to do it. When am I ever going to get this opportunity again? They start shooting Night 1 and halfway through it, she is like, whoa, I'm in way over my head. I got to bail.
My husband is not in this room.
She ejected on 4TRR grounds.
Yeah, yeah.
Listen, guys, I believe in the process, and I just have to tell you, my husband is not in this room tonight.
I think Jen's husband might be here, but I got to do the Maria way. And she marches off.
Look, I don't know. The truth is, I don't know. What we do know is two top contenders turned down the crown for reasons that are really unknown to us. We believe it may be some kind of mental health type thing, you know, just or wasn't right timing in their life, or, exhaustion. You know, Daisy kind of intimated as much, I guess, that she wanted to focus on herself and the people she loved.
I want to focus on my 800,000 Instagram followers. I don't need to be the crown. What if she had said that?
God, but she did. If she, right now she's at 818K as of recording this. If she had said yes, she would be well over a million. Well over. And that's meaningful. When you're talking about SpawnCon and stuff, once you cross that million threshold, your numbers go way up in terms of what you can make. So I don't know. I think it was a bad move. We'll get to that, obviously. But I don't know a time that we've seen anything like this. There are rumors of like Peter Krause having turned down the crown.
Cameron.
Well, Tyler Cameron, though, didn't turn it down. He made demands too high that they were like, no, dude, what are you talking about? You can't host your own season of The Bachelor. I'm sorry. Like, you know what I mean? Tyler Cameron is maybe a little Dululu.
I mean, that is turning it down, though. He's offered it.
Okay, sure. At any rate, let's move on to our number five most important takeaway in the top 10 of season 28. No true villain this season. You had the Maria Sydney Leia kind of dust up that was about the Medina comment about if she's too old or whatever, all this stuff. It wasn't really about villainous behavior. Usually you would see some scenario is set up by a producer, like a champagne gate or something like this from season 24.
Or your ex-F buddy is the musical performer.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if that turned Victoria Fuller into a villain per se, but usually the villains are manufactured through one of these kind of like producer generated instances. This was not that. This was just a conversation they had. Maybe there was some misinterpretation, and clearly through the edit, they exacerbated it, but it wasn't at the behest of like some producer made thing. And then even the villains weren't really like turned into moralistic villains. It was like, whose team are you on? And I think by the end, most people were on Maria's team, but
I would say it was a light. I would say Sydney got the villain edit most, but it was a light villain edit, I would say, in terms of what we've seen in the past. And it made it seem more like something was missing from the conversation, or like she was seeing stuff that's not there. It wasn't like, oh, she took these horrible actions against a person, threw anything in the pool.
Yeah. Nothing was thrown in the pool.
That's been their villain move of many seasons.
No shirts were ripped. No pants were shit. But the kind of secondary piece of this, at least with Sydney, I think, is even after she came out of the game, because Ashley Iaconetti, who was obviously a legacy player, a superstar in our beloved game, Ashley Iaconetti coached her into the game, got her on the show, called the producers, helped her. They're friends. And so then you had this giant legacy player like Ashley Iaconetti sticking up for Sydney, saying this is all in the edit. So I've never seen anything like that.
And, you know, Ben Higgins going off on the women tell all too.
That too. I've never seen like a superstar player come out in defense of a villain in a season, which again is like, it's not really a villain then, is it? Because usually a villain is like, this person is horrible. Hate them. Send them nasty DMs. We didn't get that this season.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's hard to say that when Sydney got so much hate mail, but
sure,
I would say in the edit, it didn't feel like the villain edits of the past.
Yeah. Like, think about Victoria, Queen Victoria.
It felt gentler.
Exactly.
Oh, God. Yeah. They didn't show anyone talking to producers unbeknownst to them.
It didn't feel like anybody was there to be the villain, you know? It was like, yeah, some of these players got involved in this thing that ended up in a 2-on-1 and there's a rivalry and all of that. But it didn't feel like the producers were pushing somebody to be like, we need you to be the villain, like they did with Chad Johnson or Queen Victoria or Shanae Ankeny. Yeah, like those players were there to give you malicious sound bites and to like push buttons.
She threw a trophy in the bushes. Oh my God, yes.
The Bush trophy. How could I forget that? God, didn't she call Genevieve Parisi a wet chihuahua or something as well?
Oh, yeah. Some sort of dog thing on the waterfall date.
Yeah. There weren't any like open insults that I can remember from this season. It just felt different. Like, you know, I'm not saying that these players weren't maybe positioned in the edit to be, in quotes, villains, but it was a different kind of villainy. It felt very different to me. It was just like a kindler, gentler villain season. And I was fine with it. Like, I didn't miss that at all.
Mm-mm. No, we didn't need it because the 4TRR parts were engaging. We're shipping the final couple so hard.
Yeah.
Speaking of professional era, our number four takeaway from this season of The Bachelor is... Clues, you know, I'm on my year of health, 2024. I'm trying to really focus on that. You know, I've got my career in order. I've got, you know, other aspects of my life, but I eat badly and I take care of myself badly. But that is changing now. I have discovered Lumi. Lumi is a game-changing whole-body deodorant designed by an OBGYN to work not only on pits, but also feet, privates, and everywhere else we get odor. I use their wipes. I use their, they have a traditional deodorant stick, too, which I use. A lovely coconut smell about it. And no matter where you use it, Lumi is clinically proven to block odor all day long, all thanks to its one-of-a-kind pH-optimized formula. They have over 275,000 five-star reviews to show for it.
It's baking soda-free, it's paraben-free, it's pH balanced for safe use below the belt, clinically proven to control odor better than a shower with soap alone. 12 hours after a shower, the average person has an odor level of 6 out of 10. Did you know that?
That's
a
disgusting.
High level. With Lumi, the average odor level is, guess what? 0 out of 10.
Yes.
Lumi's starter pack is perfect for new customers. It comes with a solid stick deodorant, cream tube deodorant, two free products of your choice. You could get mini body wash, you can get deodorant wipes, whatever you want, and free shipping. And as a special offer for everyone listening right now, new customers are going to get $5 off a Lumi starter pack with code ROSES at LumiDeodorant.com. That's L-U-M-E deodorant.com. That equates to over 40% off the starter pack when you visit LumiDeodorant.com and use that code ROSES.
Clues. A Mother's Day is coming up.
That's true.
You know, that's one of the most important holidays. We got to honor our mothers. They all went through a lot to get us here into this planet. And the gifts for Mother's Day, they can be a little predictable and boring. Sweaters, candles, the dreaded bathrobe. You only need one bathrobe, in my opinion. That's why Aura Frames is the perfect gift to mix things up this year. Named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter, Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
Aura Frames are Wi-Fi connected. They come with unlimited storage. You can share as many photos as you want from your phone to your mom's frame. Not only is she going to be grateful that it's not just another sweater for Mother's Day, she's also going to love that an Aura frame means she gets to see more of you.
Or in my case, she gets to see more of my cat, Skaboolian. My mom loves seeing him rolling around, playing with his toys, doing whatever, and I can upload as many images of him as I want every day, and my mom gets to see them in her Aura frame and then text me about it for all the rest of the day.
Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Everybody listening to Game of Roses can save on that perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code ROSES at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply.
Clues. I quit bras during the pandemic. I said no more. They're not comfortable. I'm being comfy as a lifestyle. And I couldn't picture a bra that would exist that I would want to wear. But today's sponsor, Honeylove, has revolutionized the bra game. They don't have underwire. They don't have bulky fabrics. And they are so soft. Basically feels like a second skin, which is the only type of bra I will be wearing in the year of our gore 2024. Mm-hmm. I got the crossover bra, the black runway one. It has this cute like mesh that adds peekaboo mesh that adds this very sexy touch. So it's like, doesn't look like it's, you know, a comfortable bra, but it is. And I guess I'm a bra person again, it turns out.
Well, congrats, Pace Case. I know it's a big step for you. Right now, you can treat yourself to the best bras on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/roses. Use that exclusive link to get 20% off honeylove.com/roses. After you purchase, they're going to ask you where you heard about them. Please support Game of Roses and tell them we sent you. Treat yourself to Honey Love because you deserve it.
Daisy, she did the first ever preemptive dump of the lead at the final rose ceremony slash a self-elimination with information that he didn't even know how she knew. Did the producers allow them to know who was being eliminated in order to orchestrate this?
Yes.
We believe so. Daisy is the first player to perform a knock-knock before the final rose ceremony to another player.
Yeah.
In a triumphant sisterhood moment, Kelsey then comes with her to offer emotional support during her final rose ceremony and give her a hug after she breaks up with Joey. Daisy's play was transcendent.
I agree.
Her hometown date, I will never forget. I feel like it set a precedent for what is possible, how much money can possibly be spent on a hometown date.
That hometown date was wild.
And what you can advertise, your it's family business.
I would say Madison Pruitt kind of did an advertisement for her dad.
Yes, and they rented out the stadium.
Basketball arena where her dad works.
That came to mind as soon as I said that. I was like, oh, well, that one might have been more expensive. I don't know. They had a celebrity Zoom.
Pruitt was a player that like the game wasn't ready for. She just utterly dominated the season, in my opinion, in a way that we have never really seen. She just like, she made child's play of the process itself, of the game mechanics. When she won, I'm sorry, I have to go into the past a little bit. When Madison Pruitt won her fantasy suite rose, the one after hometowns that gave her a berth into fantasy suites, literally at that rose ceremony, he's like, Madison, will you accept this rose? She's like, yep, we need to talk. Takes the rose, takes him outside, and is like, you can't have sex with anybody. Huh? Fantasy suites are next week. Unreal. Like, she just was doing things at a level that, like, no one had seen. At any rate, I digress. My apologies. We're talking about Daisy. So
everything's coming up, Daisy. I mean, Madison Pruitt.
I can't help it. She was such a great player. But Daisy is a different kind of player, for sure. She didn't really manipulate the process.
And her social media game is corresponding so well with her run through the season. She was so ready for all of these episodes to air. It's part of what contributed to her gigantic TikTok gains and Instagram.
Absolutely correct.
It's unbelievable to watch. I have so much respect for her season. I
do too.
To be fair, I do think I think her play was the best in the final episode. We'll get to it.
We will. But I agree with you 100%. I do think she made a new blueprint here. There are players right now who are, you know, 10 years old, 11, 12, at home watching this and seeing like, oh, that's my hero player. And they're going to remember what she did in this game. And when they are in the game 10 or 15 years from now, you're going to be seeing what Daisy has done echo back through this game for decades, I think, because she made it okay to know that you're getting eliminated and not like do what the producers want, which is go to that rose ceremony and get your heart broken. Pretend that you know you're not getting, or that you don't know, sorry, that you're getting eliminated. Pretend that you think you're going to get married or engaged and then have to break down and cry. And kudos to the producers in this, because she very definitely had to have a conversation with those producers and say, I want to go to Kelsey's room and talk to her about this. Okay, go for it. And then she had to come out of that conversation and be like, I know he's not picking me.
We don't know who originated the idea, it doesn't matter whether it's Daisy, whether it's the producers, because of her great third audience right. game that they wanted her to be the next lead. Like, it was either Daisy mm-hmm. or them, and either way, it's Daisy.
Yeah. The producers did it absolutely correctly, though. They built her into the next Bachelorette so perfectly. It was her mm-hmm. choice not to accept the crown, but hats off to Daisy for playing this incredible season and everything she did and all the plays we're talking about here, but also to the producers. They are a part of this. And I really can't say enough good things about what they did this season, because it was just, it was basically perfect. Basically, in quotes, perfect.
Are you coaching a producer?
I'll never tell. Shall we move on? Yes. Our number three takeaway from the top 10 takeaways of Bachelor season 28 are the gains. The Instagram numbers, the ratings, through the roof. We ain't seen Instagram numbers like this since season 24, pilot Peter Weber. We went back and looked. Even now, mm-hmm. most of the big players from the past couple of seasons.
Even ring winners.
Yeah. Gabby's the only one. Gabby Windy is the only one over a million. And she didn't hit that number. And she's not over it, by the way. She's at 1 million right now on Instagram. But she didn't hit that number until Dancing with the Stars. So even during her play time, she never hit it. And you're looking at Daisy right now at 818K. That number's still creeping up a little bit. Maybe she'll get a Dancing with the Stars. I don't know. I could see them giving it to her. And then she would probably hit a million. We don't know.
I could see that.
Yeah, we don't know what the rest of these players are going to be doing, but these gains, and obviously this is all over. Go look at Bachelor Data's charts on this. They're great. She really breaks down, you know, when did we see numbers like this and why is this happening and all that kind of stuff.
Even the Women Tell All,
yeah.
which normally is not that highly rated an episode, mm-hmm. it performed incredibly well. It was so awesome to see this. Because yeah. it's like the franchise has been reinvigorated with Golden, and now it's riding into Joey. I think it'll ride into Jen.
My fingers are crossed for Jen as well. I know that she is just faced with a Sisyphean task. She's mm-hmm. a replacement.
Her player pool is also evidence that she is not the intended crown.
Correct.
There's only one Asian guy.
And that player pool, I mean, we don't know about these guys, what their play style is like. We're just looking at literally at this point, one picture of them. Most of their Instagrams are still private. Those won't go, those won't be accepting friend requests until they all come out of the season, which is going to be in about a month and a half, 2 months. You'll start seeing them.
Don't worry. Clues has those friend requests in.
You have no idea. Immediately. Request, request, request. And I still even am following now guys who have been in prior seasons that I requested, and then they got removed before the season aired. Do you remember? Mm-hmm. I don't remember what season it was, but some of those guys who didn't make the final cut.
At least they got some gains.
Yeah, one. They got my gain.
One.
There was some season where the guys who didn't make the final cut all tried to be a little social media team. Do you remember that?
Oh my God. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Was that during the pandemic?
It was, definitely. Because they were all on a boat or something. I don't remember it exactly.
Yes, they went on a boat trip and made yeah. all this social media. They weren't called like the Rejects or something, but
it was something like that though. Yeah.
That was so funny. It's a good idea.
Yeah, we'll see if that happens on Jen's season. Certainly all the guys who have been rumored to be players now, not all of them will make the final cut. But these Instagram numbers are important. Obviously, we track them on this show, and TikTok numbers as well, mm-hmm. and look at social media and all that. It's kind of the game after the game.
This was up there in our, like, what should be the number one of this episode.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a very good indicator in the engagement of the fourth audience with the players of the season they're watching. And like we're saying, the ratings, the TV ratings, the Nielsen ratings were also off the fucking charts. We haven't seen ratings like this. Well, I say off the charts. There are no more charts. Network TV is dead. The numbers decline every season. Like Joey Grazia's season, for example, did not get ratings even as high as Zach Shawcross's season, because literally every year it goes down and down and down. That said, comparatively speaking, it was dominating everything else on network television on Monday nights anyway. And it just goes to show really that in this season, which treated the lead with respect, which helped the lead actually find love, which allowed the players to be cordial and respectful of one another, that got huge ratings. Now, it can't be forgotten This was the first Bachelor season without Mike Fleiss, the Dark Emperor of our beloved game, the creator who got ousted right before Charity Lawson season 20 last year. I think that had something to do with it.
Who has not been described as kinder or gentler.
Literally by no one ever has he been described with those terms. But yeah, I think that that does have an impact here. I think that we're seeing the result of Fleiss's kind of, you know, I mean, if you watch that, the documentary about Dan Schneider with the Nickelodeon shows, they said something in that.
I don't think I can.
Yeah, it's a rough one to say the least. But they said something in it that like is true. Most TV shows are kind of like whoever's running the show, their attitude, their vibe kind of like goes into the whole thing. And it's like, if it's a bad vibe, the show's going to have that.
Oh, totally. Top down. Every show I've worked on has been like that.
Yeah, same. It truly is. It seeps into like the nature of the content you're making. Yeah. And here you've removed Fleiss and now, oh, look what's happening. The content is, it's nice. These people are being nice to each other and it's kind of fun and funny and they get cute little moments. There isn't this threat of like, if you step out of line, we'll make your life a living hell, which I think is what it was when Mike Fleiss was there.
We'll send in a child army to sing a song about how you suck.
Yeah. It just didn't feel like they were going to do anything bad to these people. And we kept waiting for it. And really the worst thing that they did was the Kelsey card. All season, which we'll get to. That almost made the list.
The worst thing they did to Joey. Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of a good edit for the lead, our number two top takeaway from this season is Grazie. Joey Grazie Day. The greatest bachelor of all time. Maybe they protected the lead this whole season, even in the finale. They didn't sink him in order to launch the next Bachelorette season. No players were mad at him. We saw him love level 4 one player. It seemed respectful. It seemed like he's setting the blueprint that he can do two love level 3s and then one love level 4 to your final rose recipient. I think we're going to see that going forward.
I do too.
We didn't have nothing that could have been described as a rose ceremony from hell. Notably.
Yeah, I mean, I loved what they did with this. You know, if you look back at the recent prior seasons, Rose Ceremony from Hell included, I think the producers, what they got in Ben Higgins when he said, when he loved level 4 his two finalists, that gave birth to JoJo Fletcher, one of the most successful, most beloved bachelorettes of all time. And so I think they latched onto that. And they were really like, that's what we need every season. We need him, the bachelor, to say, I love you to multiple people so that we can take somebody who is shattered by it and then give them the bachelorette crown. This breaks that mold.
Yeah. Make the second place person think they're the one.
Yes. And then that ultimately kind of culminated, I think, in Clayton Eckridge's Rose Ceremony from Hell, where it was like, how bad can we make the bachelor? How twisted can we make the way that he's going to like screw one of these women over, or both in that case? And it really got to that point where it was like, this is terrible. And then they tried to do it to Shawcross again, where Shawcross was like, I'm making the Sean Lowe Goldini decision to have no sex in the fantasy suites. Oops, I had sex with somebody. And then that shatters everybody because he's told them all that he's not going to do that.
And it's also a choice in the edit. They could have taken all that out. And the shower scene.
Yeah.
360 degree shower scene.
I do think with Grazia Day, I don't know if it was his decision or if it was the producer saying like, hey, you don't have to say I love you to all these ladies. They might have been trying to pressure him to do that. And he was like, no, dude, I'm not doing that. I'm going to say it to one person.
I'm going to write it in this letter that they're going to cut out of the show to Kelsey.
Exactly.
Telling her she's the one.
But I mean, that's kind of part of it too, is they let him send that letter, you know? He sent a letter to Kelsey basically saying you won the game. That's not in the show. That has now come out. He has talked about it on some podcasts and stuff.
It allows that relationship to be a steady, growing relationship that doesn't need obstacles except for one vague letter.
Yeah, exactly.
And maybe they'll go the distance.
I think they will. Call me crazy. I think they're really in it. And I think that it is part of, you know, how it worked so well, why they are so in love is because of the process was allowed to work. Like when they talk about the process, The process is this. 30 people are dating one person, and that person gets to comparatively date and say, well, which one do I like more in any given situation, and who is the best one for me? That's all the process is. And I think that process actually does kind of work. Then when you step in as a producer and you're like, well, wait a minute, though. Let's get this musician to do a date that this person had sex with. Oh, my God. Let's make them get in a fight. Let's do a champagne gate.
Let's have her pick someone who has a girlfriend.
Poor Hannah Brown. When they do things like this, these malicious kind of roadblocks, it undermines the process. And here, what you're seeing in season 28 is the process is almost pure. There were a couple of things that they tried to screw with, but it's almost pure. And if you give a pure process, you get this outcome, which is better. And your ratings are up and all of that, you know?
And part of the process, part of the premise of this show is that your lead is one of the most desirable single people in the country. It's your Alex Michelle. It's your whoever. If you're DLH, that is Chris Soules. If you're...
I mean, that's a deep cut there. You have to have listened to, Dork Lord Harrison and Lauren Zima on a podcast that's not even in the Bachelor Nation world.
Look, sometimes the jokes are just for you, Clues.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
God, now I lost my train of thought.
You were talking about the most desirable men in the country being bachelors.
Everyone wants Joey. We have what DLP calls Joey mania. That's what we want for our leads. We don't want them to be a terrible person. The premise of the show is they're the best and they're dating the best.
Mm-hmm.
Let's cast, you know, all the modeling agencies.
I agree with you.
All the real millionaires.
I agree with you 100%.
Sports people.
But I think DLP. Grazzi like fit that bill. You know, like I said at the beginning of his season, I always get, you know, DMs as the new bachelor is like incoming about like, oh, I want to go on his season. Will you help coach me? I got more DMs about Grazzi than I've gotten about anyone. And I've been doing this for 3 seasons now, by far. I mean, it was like triple the amount. I knew that this season was going to be big based on that. I was like, people are real into Joey. This is gonna be big.
People are saying they're going in to win the ring.
Yeah, exactly. I had a bunch of people that are like, I want to marry this guy and have his babies. I was like, Jesus. All right. Well, this is going to go well, I guess. But I think that that is something they need to keep up with. Like really learn from this season. Cast another Joey as your next bachelor, whoever that may be.
Someone who is emotionally intelligent and can like sort through all the PTCs. Mm-hmm. Because that is like an easy way to make your lead look bad, if they're not handling the emotions and the dark stories with enough care.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Let's move on, shall we, to our number one top 10 takeaway from Bachelor Season 28. It is, of course, Jen Tran. The first Asian bachelorette has been crowned. I mean, long time coming, obviously, but so happy for Jen Tran and so excited to watch her season unfold. And again, I know she's got, it's just a lot on her shoulders to come in last minute and carry this thing. I think she's going to do great. I can't wait for the season to start. And I don't think we have that long to wait, maybe about a month, but I just couldn't be happier about it.
For those who have been waiting since that JoJo season when Kayla Quinn shot opening promos, and she was supposed to be the first Asian bachelorette, and then JoJo got that victimization edit and they switched it. I do think historically we're going to look back on this season as the season that gave us Jen Tran.
I do too.
Just as we only look at Nick Viall's season as the season that gave us Rachel Lindsay.
How dare you, first of all.
Sometimes I'm just doing little life checks.
Nick Viall's season gave us the greatest player of all time, Nick Viall, the great one.
I mean, we just did our number two takeaway was Joey is the greatest bachelor of all time. So
I'm not saying Viall's the greatest bachelor. I'm saying he's the greatest player of all time. All inclusive.
Okay, the definitions are changing. That's when you know.
No, the greatest bachelor is a different thing. Greatest Bachelor is a different thing. That's how good were you as a first audience in your season wearing the crown? I would put Viall top 7 or 8 maybe, But Grazia Day is a different thing, in my opinion. Like what he did as a lead.
I don't think we've ever seen a Grazia Day.
I don't either. That's what I'm saying. I think he kind of like rewrote it a little bit. But, you know, you put Sean Lowe in that category. I would put
Charlie O'Connell always.
That was the most chaotic Bachelor I've ever seen and the funniest and all of that. I would put Higgins in this category, Matt James in this category, just for simply what was asked of him was a task so enormous, and he pulled it off, in my opinion. You know, all those bubble seasons, say what you will about him, but like some really historic things did happen in them. And he was among probably the most important of those historic things, I would say.
I have another scream. I was explaining the quarantine crew to someone that I met this weekend.
I've done that exact same thing.
You gotta remind me on that women.
I've done the exact same thing. I was having some conversation with somebody about Matt James being, you know, because we were talking about have they ever picked bachelors who weren't from the franchise. And I was like, well, really, after season 13, no.
Oh my! I think that's how it came up. I think that's how it came up.
And then it was like, well, what about Matt James? And it was like, well, yeah, I mean, he technically wasn't, he didn't get a rookie season, but he was cast in Claire Crawley season. And then he became part of the quarantine crew and he was making content with Tyler Cameron and Hannah Brown. And, you know, he kind of was in the family already, you know.
I saw this person's eyes just become 1,000 yards away instantly.
They're like planning out their meals, their lunches for like the next 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
At any rate, congratulations to Jen Tran. Again, can't be happier for her. And we're so excited to watch her season unfold very shortly.
And we will be implementing our own shot o'clock, which is where we're taking a shot of whatever medicine we want right at the start time of her episodes.
Oh, nice. That'll be fun. Now, we also had three things that almost made the list and they didn't. We'll go through those quickly. One was legacy inclusion. We kind of talked about it with the Golden Fairy Godmothers a little bit, but they did it really all season, I think, in a very beautiful way, where it's starting to feel like they get it. They get that the history of the show is just as important as the current season, because without that history, there ain't no current season.
Without that history, there ain't this chunk of the audience that has held on for dear life at some points.
Yes.
We've been here. And we never went away.
I know. If the bubble seasons would have been like the first three seasons of this show, canceled, obviously. but we didn't have that. We had a lot of very important things that happened in the 20 years prior to this. And it does seem like the show is dipping back into that in a meaningful way.
Another honorable mention, we got the toxicity of the fourth audience called out at the Women Tell All. A kind of 2024 version of that anti-bullying episode of Pilot Pete's season where Rachel Lindsay came back to talk about bullying. We had it somewhat updated with, we did this for our State of the Game maybe last week, if you want to check that out more in depth. But they did call out racism, but they did, you know, some other things, but it's going in the right direction. And we also want to also back that up as much as we possibly can, that do not send any of these people any negative comments or messages.
Yeah.
They're actors.
I totally agree with that. If you have the impulse to send anyone from this franchise a message, make it your favorite player and send them something nice. That's like fully support what you're doing. Love what you're doing this season. There's no need to, in my opinion, ever send anybody anything mean. Let's move on to this other thing that almost made our list. This is the last almost made. Grazi acknowledging that the lines were scripted. There was a shot in, I forget what episode it was. They made him do a pun about something and it was kind of cheesy. And then he said, did I nail it? Was that good enough? And we see on the screen, it says the producers will do better next time or something. So it was even the producers kind of like making fun of themselves a little bit, but also acknowledging that this is a TV show. And that producers write lines that these players say, especially the lead. A lot of their stuff is written, at least in terms of like promoting whatever city they're in or whatever kind of group date theme might be occurring. And I think that that's good.
It also showed Joey's sense of humor as well. But yeah, I think we saw them breaking the fourth wall more. I think that that's important. And we saw that happen with the reunion shows too, where you're going in before DLP is talking with the unfaced warm-up person or whoever that was.
Yeah,
and that's it for our top takeaways from Joey's season. It was a pleasure to cover this one with you, Clues.
Same to you, Pace Case. Pace Case and I have been, you know, putting as much of ourselves into the show as we can for, like I said, 4 years at this point. And there were some dark days in those bubble seasons, but this just felt season 20. It felt so good just to have this. I mean, really, I think this is one of the best seasons that's ever been made, and to have it come on the heels of like these seasons that were just like hard to watch in many ways. It made me happy in a way that this franchise hasn't in a while. And I hope that we're on a very good path, a kind of renaissance of our beloved game. I feel like we are. And I think Jen Tran's going to continue that. And I can't wait to cover that season with you too, Pace Case. But let's do our awards, our season ending awards. Are you ready for this?
Yes.
Please begin.
I'm ready. First up, we're going to go with our face plays of the season. Joey Grazia Day jumping up and trying to catch a sausage with his mouth made an open-mouthed, gaping, huge eye aperture face. That was my face play of the season. I loved it. I loved the sausage wheel. It made me laugh so hard. Mm-hmm. And seeing our bachelor just get into it, just like he did with the boots, it was my favorite.
Yeah, we had some interesting face play this season. I wouldn't say this season had like a McKenna Dorn level standout. Mm-hmm. Just like if she's just sitting in the room, you might be getting crazy face play. What we had in this season, though, was a bunch of weird situational face play, like you're talking about. That was in service of this weird event that the producers are making them do. My face play of the season, too, was a weird situational one. Ooh, Rachel Nance. Rachel Nance jumping into the cenote and cracking her jaw, and then later that night, clicking it in front of him to show him that she was healed, was my face play of the season. I just have never seen anything like that. She incurred an IFI.
Oh, poor Rachel.
Had to go to the hospital, the emergency room. Mm-hmm. Then later that night had to prove to Grazi on that date that, nope, I'm fully functional. Check it out. And she did kind of a like gnashing of the teeth. That was my favorite one. Uh-huh. Aside from, I would say Kelsey and Grazi when they put the face masks on their spa date.
I thought about the Kelsey face mask one as well. Yeah. Autumn did a bunch of good face play this season, just consistently. But what's our next category?
Creature of the season. What'd you have?
There was a little pup, and this pup named Ella was at a viewing party that Joey and DLP crashed, and this pup got a 0 point rose from Joey. In some ways, this rose was the one true final rose, since chronologically it happened after Kelsey got the final rose, was my creature of the season.
You literally made me swallow water into my windpipe.
This is choking.
Your creature of the season display there. That was a great creature. I agree.
Thank you.
It almost killed me.
I feel lightheaded now.
Yeah, as do I. My creature was a little different. Of course, my creature had to do with Kelsey and her butterfly mother coming to visit her on her hometown was my creature of the season. Very rarely are you going to get a paranormal creature like this. And for my money, any creature that's dealing in the astral plane or resurrecting spirits or anything like this, proof of reincarnation, that's going to get my creature of the season.
That was my runner-up for both the connection to the PTC and the connection to the promo, which was Joey saying he has butterflies.
Yeah, that's true.
Hmm.
How about Jorge Moreno, bystander of the season?
In the opening clip of Jesus, this season,
you're gonna kill me.
We saw Joey making tear play, and he goes off camera to talk to some producers. And right there, we see this guy. Who is it? Big Pauly was my Jorge Moreno, bystander of the season. He makes a couple appearances. He is in that final rose ceremony shot, which is showed over and over again in the first episode and the last and all the promos. And he reveals that there are three roses at one point by taking a magical cloth away, a very drama move in episode 6.
I mean, Big Pauly's always a good choice. He's done a lot in our beloved game. He's another legacy player as far as I'm concerned. He's a legacy Jorge Moreno.
He's always totting with that hat.
Yeah. I also have a legacy Jorge Moreno. Ooh. My Jorge Moreno bystander of the season was Santa Claus. We have seen Santa in season after season. He's a time-honored Jorge Moreno. And we got actually two Santas in Daisy's hometown. There was a Santa driving them on a cart to the Christmas tree farm. And then there was a...
casual Santa.
Yeah, that was casual Santa. And then there was formal Santa once they got to the Christmas tree farm. And there was a Santa and Mrs. Claus. And I'll just always give it to Santa.
That one did actual lap play. I mean, that's great because our beloved game is very Christian and we see Santa in a lot of different seasons. It's one of my favorite little Easter eggs.
Is Santa a Christian character?
I don't know. Christmas?
I don't know either. I don't think so.
Isn't Christmas Christmas? Isn't that Christian?
Christmas is a Christian thing, but I think Santa Claus is more of a Coca-Cola American capitalism and marketing creature. Or character or something.
I don't know about that. I think Santa might be related to Jesus Christ.
Is it? I don't know. This shows our inability to understand even the basic American traditions.
Look, that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Now let's move on to a very fun category. Clues, what was your error of the season?
Unfortunately, Daisy rejecting the crown was my... error of the season. I get it. You're taking time for yourself. I understand all of that. I'm looking at this purely from a gameplay perspective, taking out of it all of the personal reasons for having done this. If you look at this as gameplay only, maybe I would say there's a 10% chance Daisy could capitalize on this and get crown next year. Maybe 10. This is the best chance she's going to have to get it. She was teed up for it perfectly. And I feel like she's leaving a lot on the table by not accepting this crown. I don't understand it personally. But again, she has her own reasons. And I'm not in any way saying that those reasons are wrong or anything. I'm simply looking at it from a gameplay perspective. This, in my opinion, was the biggest error even possible to be made.
Well, at least she made it on camera. So we know that she was offered the crown, which I think in itself gives a bump. Because... someone rejected the crown off camera, and that's why Maria rejecting the crown was my error of the season. I mean, you know, we were naming our episode titles. We were praying to Santa Claus and all of the above. We wanted a Maria season. And... therefore, I'm just giving her my error because I just wanted it to happen. And that's it. And now I'm free of it.
Yeah.
I'll be okay.
You've purged it. You know, she might have done it on camera, by the way. We just aren't ever going to get to see it. God, what if that's episode one? What if episode one of the next season is just like the very beginning of Maria up till she rejects it?
They shouldn't do that to Jen.
No, I agree. They shouldn't. They should put that out on the internet for a free piece of media or something.
Clues, what was your play of the season?
Daisy's self-elimination at the rose ceremony was my play of the season. With a close second being Evelyn Clark's 4TRR jacket. I never say that self-eliminations are good plays. Neither of us really do. We always say that that's like a huge error. Never do it. But the way she did it, like she couldn't have gotten any more screen time. In fact, by doing it, she probably got a little more screen time because it allowed her the knock knock. It allowed her the riding in the car with Kelsey. It allowed her all of that. And she saved herself from kind of the heartbreak edit. Even though she got that, she was in control the whole time. And it, again, as we said earlier, it just, it made a new blueprint for what you can do as a runner up. In my opinion, she was the star of the finale, even though she didn't win the ring.
For all of these reasons, Daisy's entire finale performance was my play of the season. The late in game love level 4, right before Joey's pretty much going to eliminate her. The connection to her PTC and saying that Joey has changed her life, which she backs up with her friends. And in this episode, the knock knock on Kelsey's door that still comes off for TRR, even though we've never seen that happen before. Riding with Kelsey to the final rose ceremony and then the self-elimination. It was iconic. It was like Disney character shit.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Which brings us to our MVPs. Pace Case, who you got?
While Daisy crushed in the finale, Maria was my MVP. Maria made this season for me. She won the crown. I am, of course, I don't know this to be true, but I am believing Nick Vial's tea seller regarding the crown pick. She had the most bombastic play style I've ever seen them pick for a crown. I think that this marks a new era with her play style, still getting a good edit. And even if it didn't go through for whatever reason, she might have even filmed Phantom Night One. But I just, she, to me, she made this season so enjoyable to watch.
But she didn't get gains like Daisy Kent. Daisy was my
MVP.
I just was blown away by her. Everything she did was right. Even her one-on-one dates, like everything she did was kind of elevating things to another level, all the way up to, like we just said.
Then how come she wasn't the first choice for crown?
I think she was.
You don't think it was Maria?
No. I think they went to Daisy and she was like, I don't want to do it. And they were like, Maria.
Interesting.
She was like, I'm in. And then I'm out. And now it's Jen. But I just was blown away by Daisy pretty much. And look, I love Maria too. I was right there with you wanting her to be Bachelorette because I thought that season of Bachelorette would just be unlike anything we've ever seen. I think
it might still happen.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe they would bring her back in a year. But now you're looking at, let's say that they don't pick anybody from the next season of Bachelor to be the next Bachelorette. Then you're relying back to this season. I think Daisy still gets that nod before Maria does at this point.
Time will tell.
A year from now, I think Maria will be like, she'll make some very funny social media and stuff. She's waiting for her contract to expire. Maybe she'll wind up in a Traders or a...
She's going on another show.
Not for a year, she's not.
She's gotta. Well, yeah, in a year.
Yeah. At any rate, for me, Daisy was the MVP simply for the game-changing plays she made. It's rare that you see in any sport, a player comes in who is so dominant and really so revolutionary that they change the way the game is played. And I think Daisy did that. Maria, I don't know if she did that or not, because she's kind of like a singular player. She's like a little Corinne Olympiosi. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen things like her before, but I agree with you. The edit she got was a very 4TR edit. She was protected in the edit. So her third audience game was very good.
We've never seen someone like Corinne get in crown contention.
Exactly. Exactly. So I do think she's kind of unique in that way. But for me, Daisy was just a cut above. Really doing things that I thought were not possible. I mean, a lot of her plays were things, when I saw them anyway, that I was like, wait, what? You can do that? Oh my God.
Well, we're comparing apples and oranges. There were so many strong players this season. And, you know, I thank all of them for what they gave to this season, bringing The Bachelor back.
For sure. Big hats off to everybody involved in season 28, from the producers, to Grazi,
DLP,
to all the players, to DLP, to Nick Vial covering it so well on Vial Files.
Evelyn jumping over the table.
Yeah. Evelyn Clark really did leave it on the field. Like, whatever you could say about any of these players, what Evelyn Clark was doing in the early season before she got eliminated, I mean, my God. Transcendent stuff.
I'll never forget the table jump.
Neither will I.
I won't.
Neither will I.
And Joey's face play when she did it.
Yeah, this season had so much. That's what I'm saying about like the talent pool so deep. That jumping over the table and stuff like that, the 4TRR jacket, like any other season, that is the player that producers are like, we got to keep her around as long as we can because she's so entertaining. This season just had such a stacked roster. It was like, it doesn't even matter.
I would come in night one. I would look around. I'd be like,
yeah, I'm out of here. I picked the wrong season. Can I come in next season, please? Can I come in after another pandemic?
They're going to be like, that girl, Lizzie, she's so brave.
Indeed you are. And so is everybody else who joined us this season. We also want to thank everybody in the fourth audience, everybody in the pit for coming on this ride with us through another fantastic season of Bachelor. We can't wait to cover that Bachelorette season with Jen Tran and everything else we got going on Patreon. Bunch of Clues Corners popping off. I'm doing Traitors season one in there right now. We got Pace Case Palapa.
Clues literally can't stop making corners.
Can't do it. Won't do it.
The content, and it's not like the content's exquisite.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
I'm about to start Traitors season one corner.
Oh, God, it's so good. I'm like itching to do another one because I love it so much that season.
I can't wait to see what Lion Dyke does. I can't wait.
I just watched him so far. His crowning achievement is
no spoilers.
It's not a spoiler. They have a shot of him. All the players are like in the house mingling or whatever. And they have this shot down a long hallway. He's by himself. He's looking at this grandfather clock and he's kind of just like looking like from every side in the front. And he goes, wow, that's really beautiful. And then they just cut away.
Yeah. That's so wholesome.
I know. He's like, it's the real estate agent. Ari Leyendyke is like looking at how the house is, what is it called?
Staged.
Yeah. He's looking at the staging of the mansion. It's so funny. Anyways.
That's very funny.
Thank you again to everybody for joining us. And we will have our This Week in Bachelor Nation will be out on Friday. We hope you will join us for that as well. And before we go, Pace Case, as always, what is that dwab at?
It's been 8,044 days without an Asian bachelor. Praise be, Dark Lord Palmer.
Please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us. And then please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us. And then please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us, and then.
Creams and serums are made of 70% water, 15% preservatives and emulsifiers, leaving only around 15% for the active ingredients that your skin needs. But luckily now, there's Fiber Skincare.
15 years ago, the scientists behind Fiber Skincare started working on nanofibers, which are 500 times smaller than human hair. You know, I saw that in Three Body Problem. Mm. 1 year ago, they patented a way of wrapping the nanofiber around oil or liquid-based ingredients. This means they can deliver 5 times the active ingredients compared to creams or serums, as there is no need for water, preservatives, or emulsifiers.
The first formulation made with this technology is plant-based, anti-wrinkle. It's a set of patches that you use over a series of 7 days. You just put these on whenever you would apply your serums, and your skin is going to feel tighter in 10 seconds. And over the seven-day program, it has been clinically proven to reduce wrinkles by, get this, 19.4%, a very precise percentage. In fact, they have a tighter skin guarantee. If your skin isn't tighter in 7 days, they're going to give you your money back, no questions asked.
You get the tighter skin guarantee with this 7-day routine. Tighter skin or your money back. Get a 15% discount code by using the discount code GAME. That's Fiber Skincare.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.